What's happening?
It's Yo, what it do?
Cut season 2, episode 14. I got a very, very extraordinary guest today. I mean, the guy he's worked his ass off all throughout his career, but he's been a part of one of the biggest shows around the world that everyone was hooked to watching on Fox. I mean, every channel that I could think of created an entertainment department just to talk about this show. And we have one of the songwriters. I got Six John in the building.
How you doing? What's popping? Good, bro. How you?
Bro, I'm blessed, man. I'm out the way. I'm coronavirus free. Virus free, out the way, quarantine.
Same here.
Hell yeah.
It's funny that's even a thing now. Like, yeah, man, you know, I'm out here corona free, baby, you feel me?
Bruh, I was crazy. Saying earlier, bro, it feels like, I wonder what it was like in like the late 70s, early 80s with AIDS. Like, was everybody acting the same way?
Possibly. It's been a few, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. I can imagine. Probably, I think it probably was less panic because you think about the access to information that we have now.
Right.
Like, all of our information access is, like, in the front, in the palm of our hands, literally. So, in that day and age, you probably had to, you know, go talk to somebody or get the newspaper or something. Like, I can only imagine. Probably wasn't that big of a panic right away, but this is different because everybody's a journalist with their phones. Everybody's a videographer. Everybody's an expert. So we got access to the information in real time. So it puts everybody in a little panic. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, real talk. And for the people that was panicking 3 weeks ago, they look like geniuses today. And the people that's panicking now look like they struggling.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I took it serious, man. Like I'm in Las Vegas right now. I actually drove out here last Sunday. And I dipped out of LA just to kind of get a change of environment, you know, post up out here, go to the studio every day. So it's been cool, man. Just been chilling. Solo.
Man, so every episode I start off with a quote, and I just want you to weigh in on it and how it relates to you or if it doesn't relate to you.
Got you.
You just drop a character like this, that, and the other, and it's done? Terrence Howard.
I don't know if that relates to me.
Well, I think with in my opinion, I try to go with the variety of music that you have and the different angles you take. You take characters and different elements of the music, and you definitely assert it with your voice and your songwriting skills.
Great point. I didn't even think about it in that realm, but no, that's a great point. It's funny because we were just having a conversation yesterday. I was talking to my nephew, really dope musician as well. And he was saying the same thing, like, Unc, you know, you could spit like some hard bars on this song and then you could do a pop record and then you could do an Afro beat. Like you can literally, we was having fun on FaceTime and he was like, I made this beat. I can hear you rap to it. I was like, rap like me, like imitate me. He was like, I can't duplicate your style because I can never attach it to one thing. So I thought that was interesting. No, that's a good point, though. I feel that.
I know. See, that's the first time, bro, that I was able to, because I picked these quotes, bro, by design, so that, you know, I try to relate to people without knowing them. And then, so I call it the icebreaker. And this is the first time I got to explain myself.
It worked. That was good.
Hey, it's all love, bro. So let me get into my next segment, because I want the origin story. We already started talking about it. Let's segue to it. Did the game choose you or did you choose the game?
It chose me, man. As far as I can think back, just thinking about like being in the house with my parents and my siblings and my mom and dad. You know, my pops, rest in peace, he was a dope singer and played guitar all the time. My mom, who's still here, played keys. And they would just kind of sit around the house and powwow and just play music. Like she'd be on the keyboard. I'm possibly on the guitar, and I just grew up in that. So I would have like, I remember having like a little Casio keyboard that was like mini, and I was probably 9 or 10 years old, and I would try to play along with what they were doing. Subconsciously, I was like developing my ear and stuff like that, things that I didn't realize. And then, you know, by the time I wrote my first 19 years old, and But I was too shy to really, like, show people that I did it. Like, my family knew I did it, but outside of them, I really wouldn't just display it for years. Even, like, through most of high school, too, I still wouldn't do it. And I was just trying to just perfect my craft over and over. But it definitely chose me. It's, even when I think back to being, like, young, like, 5, 6 years old, and I could hear music in, like, from far away, and I could hear, like, the bass line, and I would know what song it was. And I couldn't really hear the song, and then we'd pull up on it. I'm like, I didn't know why I could do that. But when I think back to it, I'm like, damn, like, yeah, I was born for it. I had to be.
So what was the first moment that you got your, like, first big placement where it was, like, a confirmation of what you're doing is a reality?
My first big placement was was Pootie Tang, the movie Pootie Tang. That was the first thing I actually saw my name on in stores. And I remember driving to the store and just picking up the back of the CD to, like, really see my name. Like, damn, this is weird. This is crazy. But yeah, I did a song with Shaq. A lot of people don't know, I wrote for Shaq early in my career. That was my first foot in the door. So I wrote for Shaquille O'Neal. Me and him had a song on the Pootie Tang soundtrack. That was my foot.
A guy that I work with.
Say that again.
The guy I work with, Shaquille O'Neal, is his artist. Like, he comes to his studio, Gemini Music, Haggy Bear. Shout out Haggy Bear. But Shaq's one of his artists right now. So, West Coast Customs and Records.
Oh, okay. Shaq, one of the most talented dudes I ever worked with. Dope. He could freestyle like crazy. He could actually write. He just, you know, at the time, you know, he was on the Lakers. They was in the midst of, you know, winning championships. So, this is realistic. And it was just kept going from there.
Wow. Hey, you just blew my mind, bro. Like, took me back to the 90s, then took me back to the glory years of the Lakers, and then boom, man. So what happened after that? Like, where did it go from working with Shaq? Because a lot of people get highs and lows. Did you go into a low, or did you go into a high?
I'm glad you asked that. So just to confirm, in the 90s, nobody still knew I did music yet, right? So 2001 was when Pootie Tang came out, I want to say. And that was when I started working with Shaq as well. So I ended up writing for him, like, most of his album that year. He had singles that came out with Common and Black Thought. I wrote Nate Dogg. WC was his first single. It was a song, Connected, I wrote. And you know what? I had momentum. I had signed a production deal to who was then a really close friend of mine, that I knew, an older cat that I knew, did a deal with him, and we was rocking. You know, I had a good buzz, especially regionally. I was making noise on the West Coast a lot. I was in Source Magazine. I was in XXL. I had a cool role. I was on the radio every day, Power 106. I was on the beat. Lala, who's Lala Anthony now, she was on the beat out here, right? But Lala was my roommate. So it's crazy, right? So here's the crazy dynamic. It was me, Lala, and Ethiopia. Ethiopia is the president of Motown now. So us three was like, we was like Three's Company. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was us and then Lala's big ass Rottweiler. Blaze. His name was Blaze. Big ass Rottweiler. And we lived in the valley, man, like right off of, you know, Havenhurst and Victory. And it was dope. Lala was on the radio. He was working at, I don't know if she was at Edmonds or something, Babyface's spot, something like that. But it was just a dope dynamic, man. Like I said, I was making noise, had a buzz. O2, Neo and I was working, had some crazy joints by then. And then, you know, the momentum just kept going. And then it kind of came to a standstill, right? You asked about lows. So probably like 03-ish, 04, myself and the label kind of started. We just got to like a creative block, I guess. I don't know. Just couldn't really go any further.
Gotcha.
Cool thing was in 2003, I had did a record with Brian McKnight. It was a title song on his album called U-Turn. We did a joint, U-Turn, me, McKnight, and Fabulous. So McKnight took me on, that was my first tour. I performed on Soul Train. So that was kind of like another confirmation, like, oh, this is, it's still real, cool. my buzz is still good. My momentum is good. I got great rapport with DJs and artists. You know, it was just a great situation. But again, so me and the label that I was signed to, the production company, just kind of came to that block. So I kind of pulled, you know, we just kind of pulled away a little bit. I was doing my own thing, but I was still signed. And what happened in that was I used to do intros for the radio station. So Power 106, I had like almost every show's intro, I think probably except for Big Boy. So Big Boy was early in the morning, but like from 10 a.m. slot, like all the way down to night, I had the intro for everybody's show.
Wow.
Then I had Lala's intro too. on 100.3 The Beat. So my buzz was pretty good, right? Say, Paul Rosenberg used to come to LA a lot. Paul Rosenberg is Eminem's manager. Right. My boy Chase Infinite. Chase is our connection good? You can hear me good?
Yeah, we good.
Okay, bet. So Chase, who's ASAP Rocky's manager now, Chase was a dope-ass MC back in the day. So Chase called me one day and he was like, yo, like, Paul been hearing you on the radio. He wanted to meet you. And I'm like, what? Like, mind you, I'm in a standstill with the dude I'm signed to. So I'm just like, all right, bet. Like, that's like one of my favorite MC's managers. So let's do it. So Chase was real tight with DJ Muggs from Cypress Hill. Right. So he's like, yo, come down to Muggs studio. They want to hear you on some of Muggs beats. I'm like, okay, cool. Go to Muggs studio, meet Muggs. Chase is there. Man, I wrote like 5 songs, you know, probably in like a week span or whatever. Did some records with Muggs and with DJ Khalil, incredible producer. And man, fast forward, Paul and them hear the records. They hear that I can, you know, I'm versatile when it comes to the music. And they basically offered me a deal, man, to Shady.
Wow.
Straight like that, 2004. And so now I have to talk to the company I'm signed to and to explain to them the situation. Like, yo, they wanted to do a joint venture with the dude that I was signed to, right? So it wasn't like, give us 6 John, he's on Shady now. It's like, yo, let's do a joint venture. So we end up going to Jerry's Deli when it was by the Beverly Center. And we met myself, Paul, some Shady representatives, people from Shady Records, people from my company that I was with. And we sat there, man, we had a great conversation, and Paul basically put it on the table. It was like, yo, like we want to do it. We think we could take 6 to the next level. And dude that I was signed to, I'll never forget these words, man. Never forget. He said, why should I give you my artist? That's what he said to Paul Rosenberg. I'm like, what?
Why do we own people, bro? We don't own nobody.
So crazy, right? And so Paul was like, no, we're not asking you to give us your artist. Like, we want to do a deal with you. Dude was just so prideful, just so on his shit that it just, you know, it didn't pan out. So he's forever labeled the deal killer. And there was some other like weird stuff that went on like right after that, but that was kind of like my last straw with the dude. And I pulled away from the situation and went on about my way.
So did you have
my story is crazy, man. It's crazy.
So after you got the opportunity, did you have to reinvent yourself? Did you have to keep the wheel going?
So the funny thing happened. So I kind of separated myself from the situation. I was just chilling. I did reinvent myself because I signed a bad contract, which we've seen countless times.
Right.
And the contract held me from being an artist, a solo artist anywhere else. But what it didn't hold me for is production, because I didn't even make beats or nothing back then. And wow. So once I had my lawyers looking into it and blah, blah, the contract was really bad. Ultimately, I had to wait the contract out the whole duration to be able to be cleared as an artist to do a deal or anything as far as the album form. But I could still do features, didn't say nothing about that, and I could still produce. So I did reinvent myself and I did it out and start making beats. So yeah, I reinvented myself in that realm. And then right around then, Neo got signed to Def Jam. And so he's like, yo, I need a DJ for my promo tour. You think you learn how to DJ? And I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, let's do it. So I ain't DJ at all. But they just, if you look at his early shows, it was like a play. It was him, one dancer, Tanisha, and a DJ. That was it. And we did it like a play. It just played out like that, 15 minutes. And so I watched my man DJ Minus, you know, do the show for a couple. I think I watched 3 shows and I was like, all right, I got it. And that was it. I DJed for him for you know, that whole first album. And it was dope. So yeah, I reinvented myself, became a producer, became a DJ. You just got to learn how to wear a lot of hats. I always tell people, if I would have just sulked and just like been sick about not being able to be an artist, it wouldn't have panned out. So I just kept trying to just wear a different hat and learning different aspects of the game just so I could be multifaceted.
So if you feel like at any of them times you got those confirmations and you were like, you know what, there's an opportunity to become a real estate agent, become a broker, something like that, do you feel like you would have did it or you would have kept on chasing the plan A?
Funny you say that. So there was a time when I stopped touring with them and I kind of wanted to just do something normal. My daughter was getting a little older and So I stopped touring and I got a job at a bank and I did something I had never done before. Now, mind you, I'm fresh off a tour though. Like literally, I was in Europe with on a Neo tour, applying for a job back in LA, faxing stuff from Manchester, England back to Chatsworth or whatever. Wow. So when I get off the tour, I'm pulling up to my banking job as the lowest on the totem pole in a big ass Range Rover. And people looking at me like, what did you used to do before you came here? And I'm like, nothing. I just worked like everybody else. But I did that and I did it for 4 years. But I'm gonna be honest. In those 4 years, and I love my job, I love the consistency. It's the opposite of music business because you know that this consistency, you know you're gonna get every 2 weeks. Boom, check gonna hit, direct deposit, whatever the case. It's not that hurry up and wait game, that hustle game. So I love that aspect. However, I would be at my desk sometimes and I can't not make music. It's literally impossible. You know what I'm saying? So I used to be behind on reports and stuff like that. Boss walking in, I'm like, I got this song idea. Like, I have to get this out because if I don't, at least write down
some of it. The
foundation. Yeah, I'm gonna lose it. So one day my job, they were moving, they got bought out by a smaller company and they were about to move to another location and I just left. I thought it was divine intervention and I'm like, because I was already kind of like over it and music was still calling me. I was still doing it, I just couldn't do it, you know. Those 4 years was a little slower and so I left the job and was on leave of absence for like a year and then Empire came. So, go figure. It worked out.
Yeah. Won't he do it, man? Won't he do it?
Yeah, it was less than a year. It was less than a year. I was gone less than a year. I was like, I know something's going to happen. I could feel it. And yeah, the show came about.
Man, divine intervention. And it's a testimony. Yep.
Absolutely. So,
I got to go into my serious segment. You know, it's my awareness segment. It's where I ask my guests pretty much when was the last time they were pulled over. And the whole idea behind it is to give youngsters pretty much a voice of someone that's been through it and is successful and they know what to do to get through it, as well as, you know, the rest of us that I've interviewed. And we're still here. We're not 6 feet under. We're not sitting down. We're not trying to figure out how we're going to get out on some jail songs. We're living life. And, you know, it's important that the choices we make daily applies to that, to keep it going. And so I asked my guest, last time you were pulled over.
Man, I need to knock on wood because I probably haven't been pulled over since, it's got to be like 7 years. It's been a long time.
So what are you doing right, bruh, so that, you know, other people can implement that?
I just be chilling. I don't do nothing crazy. I don't drive crazy. I'm low key. I don't drive a car that's,
you're not pushing a Rari doing 100 on a Heway.
How can I? Nah, I'm, and nah. And it ain't even that. It's I don't drive anything. I'll tell you this. Back in the day, I used to drive a 96 Impala, big body. Those are the type of cars that police look for. More so than they, you know, it's different than driving a Rari, doing 100, you know what I mean? That's even different. You can go by driving, you know, 90 in a Ferrari, and then somebody else might be behind them in a 91 Caprice, four deep.
And they're going to get blurred instead of the Rari. You right.
You'll see berries and cherries in your rear view. You know what I'm saying? So
berries and cherries. I ain't never, boy, have never heard that terminology.
You'll see berries and cherries in your rear view, player. So for me, I started to understand that. It was funny because I used to drive an Impala, and then the homie had an Impala a couple of years ago. And they went out of town and left the car at my crib. And I was about to go hoop. I leave my car parked, and I'm like, I'm going to take the homie's car to the gym. When I tell you, I pulled away, boom, hit a U-turn on me. Literally, too. I'm like, oh, no. I'm taking this back to the house. I'm driving my bike. So that's one of the things I understood. Like, even when I, you know, when you go to a dealership, say you go to a hole-in-the-wall spot, and people like, a dude really, I was going to buy this Mercedes. And when I got there, dude was trying to show me Monte Carlo stuff. I was like, bro, I'm not driving no Monte Carlo. Not unless it's a luxury sport lowrider. Like, I'm not driving no Monte Carlo. Those are just, you know, the police, I'm sure they have a list of cars and situations that they just really go after. So other than that, even if I did, I'd still be chilling. I'd be laid back, chilling. I don't do nothing crazy. I'd just be a bro. Some people tell me I drive like a grandfather because I just be chilling.
Gosh. So.
But not to cut you off, let me just say this. When I did get pulled over in the past, I never had a bad situation with a police officer. Never. I just understand that you got to be a chameleon in certain situations. So my friends used to be like, man, you got good luck with police. I got bad luck. I'm like, no, I just don't have that demeanor and that energy when they come up. I'm respectful. I'm articulate. I speak to them. I give them what they want. Nothing crazy going on. And that shit saved me. I got pulled over one time leaving the studio 2 a.m. with a open bottle of Patron in my back seat on the floor, weed in my in my glove compartment, and I'm tipsy. I was driving tipsy, and I'm probably swerving. I had just got like some fries, McDonald's or something, and I'm like, and boom, berries and cherries, he hit me. I pulled over, and I turned it off. And dude was like, he came and talked to me. I'm tipsy, bro. I could have got a DUI. And I'm like, yo. And he's like, I saw you swerve. And I'm like, yeah, I just got some food. I was reaching down for my fries in my lap. I was like, I'm just like sleepy. I just left the studio. Boom, hit him with the gift of gab. And he was like, okay. Boom, get my information. You go back, run me. I'm clean. Comes back. He's like, yo, maybe you should get a Red Bull or something. I'm like, those make me jittery. Like, I'm going to just roll my windows down, turn my music up. Dude, I'm fake. He's like, be safe, get home safe, enjoy the rest of your night. Boom, I'm like, cool. But it's all in your demeanor. If you automatically like, and you feeling that way, like they wait, you gotta almost put them at ease. And that's what I would always do.
Real talk, let that stick with everyone that's watching and listening. Just put people at ease, even if it's the police. Right now with this coronavirus, them nurses, they look at you crazy, put it at ease.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do a thing called trading places, and I take two iconic people's lives and I swap them, and it's like that movie, Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, one of my favorite movies.
See, you know the deal.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take Jada Pinkett Smith and trade places with Hillary Clinton. Number one, will it work?
I think Jada has the mindset to be the first lady. But you have to ask, okay, so is it Jada with Bill or Jada and Will is in office? Is Jada and Bill?
I'm sorry, it has to be Jada and Bill. Okay, and then now Hillary is now with Will.
That's interesting. So Jada and Bill, Jada not going for all the cheating stuff. it's a whole nother dynamic. I don't even think the, who was that, Monica Lewinsky?
Yep.
I don't even think that even happens if Jada is with Bill. You don't even explore that world. I don't think. I would. But shit, who knows? Ooh, Hillary and Will. Nah, that's a divorce. That's a divorce. Yeah, nah, that's not happening.
So, name one thing that'd be differently if that really happened.
Shit, everything. We don't get Jaden, who made a song last year or 2 years ago, and I was like, this shit is dope. I'm an icon living. That shit was really dope. We don't get that.
And it's so,
yeah, we don't even get to experience that. We don't get to experience his daughter and you know, with my hair and all that stuff. We don't, totally different. So we don't get to see those moments in music happen. It's crazy to think about trying to change a moment that yeah, we wouldn't even get that. Not to say that they wouldn't have successful kids, but it would be probably
it'd be different.
A lot different. Yeah, that's crazy.
I like that. I'm gonna twist your head one more time before we get off this topic. Do you think Jada would have still talked to Tupac knowing that white boy Bill Clinton was on her?
Yep. Yep. There's nobody in this world that wouldn't have talked to Tupac, man. Like, his energy was just it was just too captivating. Yeah. Bill would have had to like double back after the whole Pac stuff happened. Like, oh, I remember you. Hey, you remember me? We used to talk back in the day. I just wanted to see if you were
wanted to go out from Arkansas.
Yeah, exactly.
Want to go out to a U of A game? Maybe go see the Razorbacks play or something?
Man, right. You know, Little Rock is where it's at.
Yeah, right, right.
We can make a life out here. Be a great life out here.
Oh, Lord. And Hillary, man. I think all the movies Will made would have been the same, but I think they would have had divorce movies way ahead of time than him doing all this love of humanity that he did.
Yeah, probably would have changed the order of his films.
For real.
That's interesting. I like that. Trading places.
Okay, so my next thing I got for you is called Impulse Q&A. And pretty much I ask random questions that are pulled from these stack of cards. They got good questions on them. They don't pay me, so I don't say their name, and we leave it at that. But I randomly selected three. They're out of this world, or they right up your alley. Any way it goes, point impulse. Question number one. How much would someone have to pay you to eat a live spider?
Wouldn't do it.
He said zero.
Yeah, wouldn't do it. Hell no. Nah.
I get the spider. I ain't finna eat it.
Yeah, I'll stomp on it, punch it in the face, all type. I'll walk a spider with a leash.
Man, I spray a water out. A spider out. Spray it all the way out, like to the bottle's empty.
Doop, 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 doop. Sound like a Kendrick album. For real, yeah. Nah, I ain't eating no spiders, bro. All
right, question number two.
I'm vegan. I don't even eat chicken, so I ain't eating no spider.
That's a blessing for you to be able to say that you're a vegan and you still, like, a lot of people will talk their hoopla that they're going to change their lives and eat right and do better, but you live in it. So now I got to take my hat off to you.
And oh, man.
That's taking my hat off to you, bro. I didn't know you were a father, bro. I got to take my hat off to you being a dedicated dad, bro. You a part of the group.
Absolutely. Nothing. The only hood I bang is fatherhood.
Oh, God. You feel me? Yeah, I wiggle with the rest, but I don't bang it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. That's an all day, every day thing for me. The greatest feeling in the world.
Man, the greatest gift. I'd be thinking, like, sometimes, bro, I'd be like, man, whose kids is them? And it'd be my kids.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. But yeah, no, vegan since October 2018. So it's been going good so far.
Wow, congratulations, bro.
Thank you, man.
Question number two.
Yeah.
What would you do if you were invisible for a day?
rob a bank. That'd probably be the first thing. I go get a, go hit that vault real quick. Like
he said, I want to make sure I'm invincible. If I get away with this, then I know I'm really invincible.
Yeah, because tomorrow I'm gonna be like, damn, that's crazy.
I did that shit yesterday.
Yesterday. Sitting on a bag though. Stroll up in that thing, invisible.
All right.
That's probably all I would do. I wouldn't like do no creep stuff, like go like, you know what I'm saying? Go spy on people, like that's weird. Because I'm just an advocate of, like, don't go looking for stuff you don't want to find. So, yeah. I wouldn't, like...
Baby mamas, wives, understand that statement right there.
Yeah, right, for real. Don't go looking for stuff you don't want to find. I don't want to see nothing, so...
Man, talk yeah, I go, about I, it. Don't go looking for it, talk about it, and then keep on reading. The person, not the book.
Right, right, exactly. Say that.
Man.
Yeah, I hit a bank, though, for sure.
I ain't mad at you, bruh. I'm not. I probably would have hit the Federal Reserve, just not a bank. But I ain't mad at you.
Yeah, well, whatever case, wherever the most, you know, if I got to hit one Federal Reserve or 10 banks.
Yeah, he said, I'm going to keep
you sitting
it
pretty.
They're going to be like, I don't know how this money missing.
Right.
Question number no three. What happened on your worst date?
My worst date?
Yeah.
Ooh. Damn. That's a good one. I don't... Damn. I can't really think of a time that I had, like, a bad date.
Well, then give me a crazy date. Something that just sticks out where you're like, man, that crazy bitch, I can't believe I talked to her.
There was a girl I dated that was very stalkerish. She was kind of crazy to the point where I was like, yo, like, you gotta leave me alone type stuff. And I remember I was taking out my trash and I get outside and she was standing in front of my car. It was like some weird, and I'm like, what the f-? She's like, you weren't answering my calls. I just want to talk to you. I'm like, yo, you gotta get up out of here. I'm about to call the police on you. Like,
you bugging.
Super bugging. Yeah. I can't think of a bad... That's crazy. I don't know if I had, like, a bad date. No, not really. I definitely dealt with some crazy situations, though.
You ever had food thrown at you, like, in Love and Hip Hop?
Never had food thrown at me. Nope, never had. I never had, like, no... You know, like, I think my daughter's mom, he probably had the most... quarrels, but never nothing physical, nothing like that.
Respect. So, I respect.
Yeah.
All right. So, what are you most excited for coming up, bruh? Like, you know, you're involved in a lot. You keep on evolving. You keep on leaving your imprint. What are you most excited for coming up?
Finishing my album. Finally, I've been working on this project for a little over 2 years, and I never take long to finish a body of work, but this time I did it intentionally because I always hear like some of my favorite for this long. I'm like, and I listened to the body really solid. And I all used to pride myself in being able to finish stuff fast as far as music goes. But I really took my time just to kind of make sure everything is right and everything's just in the right place. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to start shooting my documentary about my story. The dope thing about it is I used to just carry my camcorder around everywhere. So even back in the day when I was talking about the Shaq days and all that stuff and early Neo days, like Brian McKnight, I used to always have my camera with me and I used to film everything. And I was just always interested in having the footage for myself. Not to think that here we are, you know, 15 years later, being able to implement that into a movie form and tell my story. I'm excited about that. Excited to start, you know, as a music supervisor for a big film. I can't say the name of it, but definitely excited for that too. Yeah, man. Good things going on. Good things. There's a kid that I produced for out of Long Beach named Dirty Dale. Super, super dope MC.
long. He's got a lot of talent.
Another kid I work with. A lot of talent. Yeah, I was just saying that. I like a lot of them cats. Like, Savvy the Third, I like that kid too.
Savvy Third, Tayef Third. I like Ray Vaughn.
I haven't heard Ray Vaughn yet.
He's well, shit, by the time this drops, hopefully TDE releases him. But oh well, I said it. He signed to TDE, bruh.
Oh, okay.
And he's
I do know who that is.
He's gonna be the face. Everyone's been talking about Ray Vaughn, bro. He's gonna be the face. He's like a Meek Mill energy cross with DaBaby and Drake, but he records like Lil Wayne. Like,
he's been on TDE for a minute.
Huh?
He's been on TDE for a minute, right?
No, since November. But they haven't rolled him out yet. And they said that he's supposed to be the quickest that they're rolling out. They were gonna drop him to the world on South by Southwest, but South by Southwest got canceled.
Yeah. Damn. No, I gotta check for him. Now. I was thinking of somebody else. There was a dope kid like on TDE. I think he was from Detroit or something. I forgot his name. But yeah, this kid, Dale, he's really dope. I produced the very first song on his album. His album is called How the Fuck Did This Happen? And I produced the intro song. It's crazy. It's so crazy because he's young. Lyrically, it's like he been here before, like in the 90s or something like that. I got another kid out of Virginia, R&B kid, that I work with named Naki. Super dope R&B kid, and ready to get his stuff kind of finished. We started it in 2018, but obviously the distance and, you know, things happen. So I think everything happens in its perfect time. So being able to finish his stuff, I'm excited about that. And yeah, B-Dot, the guy who's a dope ass battle rapper. He raps on, you know, URL and all that stuff.
Yes, sir.
I executive produced his EP that he put out last June. It's really dope. And I'm gonna help him with, you know, with his new stuff. So, man, I'm just trying to, you know, lend my creativity and my expertise or whatever, help my relationships, whatever it is, to whoever else is it, you know, I see promise in, and those cats I really see promise in, for sure.
You're investing your intellectual property into people so that they can grow with the property. It's like, I like to say, it's like watering gardens. You're gonna water a couple other people's gardens and still gotta remember to water your own.
Absolutely. But
you come back to those after some time, you're gonna have some big old plants, some fruits of the labor to pull off of.
Absolutely.
And so that's, man,
and it doesn't happen all the time. Like when I hear somebody and I'm like, oh, like you get it. You really get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have to teach you how to do what you do. All I'm doing is I'm good at making everything in song form. So you may not know how to play because MC. And I used to be that. I used to just be an MC.
Wow.
I mean, you know, my engineer, producer, big brother Sauce, and Go, and all these greats, and seeing music put together in different ways, it helped me learn how to arrange stuff I hear totally different than I heard even 5 years ago. But I'm just always a sponge. I'm always trying to learn. I'm always trying to develop, you know, another wrinkle in my brain every day. I'm never going to get to the point where I say I'm dope. I'm never going to get to the point where I'm playing you something and I'm like, oh, this is dope. You got to hear, this is fire. I don't even talk about myself like that. I play it. I let you be the judge. You might like it. You might not. Like, it is what it is, but here's what I did, you know what I'm saying? So I try to just stay humble and on that platform, and like I said, just help out the next generation as much as I can.
You remain hungry and humble. You're hungry for more and more. You don't settle for complexity. You go ahead and keep on going and going, bro. So I gotta take my hat off to you, because that's gonna be the blueprint that people are gonna be able to look at and be like, man, we could do it like this person, and he went through this way, he saw this way, and he still continued going. That's the legacy that I'm happy to know that I got to hear today, bro.
I appreciate that, bro. 100%. I appreciate that.
All love, bro. So I got to ask this, man. I flip all my guests on this last question. It gets everybody every time. And I'm going to hit you with it because it's unique. You notice the show's unique.
Very unique. I love it, by the way. I love it.
Hey, that's love, bro. That's major love. You got any questions for me?
How long you been growing your beard?
3 years.
3 years. Do you ever get food stuck in it and not realize it's there?
Bro, my wife takes pictures of me and sends it to me on Messenger or a DM on IG talking about, you know, you got that in your beard. And yeah, like you could have told me, you didn't have to take a picture of it and then a paper trail of it.
That's hella funny. No, so, okay, so how long you been doing this podcast?
To be honest with you, bro, I started this end of November, December. And then I interviewed Bobby D in January, and pretty much my whole elements changed. I give a lot of love to Bobby D. Prior to this, I was managing an artist for a long time and working with producers, but never making anything of it. And then I got a job working for Marvin Gaye III as his assistant, and this podcast started, and then more things happen. The universe work, God bless me over and over again. And it's like, you know, I'm getting all the fruits of the labor I've been watering for a long time.
It's really dope, man. I will say, I like how you has it. I like Nick View has gone. And if I can help you in any ways and, you know, connecting the dots to other people to do more interviews, I think people are going to enjoy that. Because I get to see and be a part of a lot of podcasts. But this is definitely different. The style of it is different. And I think this shit is really dope, bro. For sure.
Bro, that's love, bro. I really appreciate that. Especially coming from you, bro. Like,
nah, man. That's real talk. It's not just the general question. You took time in your craft. And like I said, when those artists that I spoke of that I work with, the thing that I like about them is they get it. They take time in perfecting their craft. And they care about it. I can see the same thing in the way that you design your questions and stuff like that. You got segments and stuff like that. You care about it. That's going to take you a long way. I think this is dope.
That's one thing I'd say that the game misses and it needs is just genuineness. Everybody puts this facade of reality versus if you hit people with what's genuine, you're going to have a longevity.
For sure. Yeah, man. Keep it up, bro. This shit is dope.
Hey, it's Contrast Uncut, Season 2, Episode 14. I had the pleasure of interviewing 6 John, ladies and gentlemen. What an interview, bro. What an interview.
I appreciate you, bro.
Shout out Bobby D Presents. I love you, brother. I appreciate having this platform to get people like 6 John on. And, man, we out this thing. One thing. Black Star, are you Bishop or you kill on the roof for the juice? CL Smooth, you got me reminiscing over you. I had that 1G regulate, mind playing tricks on me. Ghetto boys, better days, jump around, house of pain. Mama